Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. I am going to keep the show short today because I just want to get everyone ready to prepare for the month of June of 2023 to make phone calls, write letters, and email major media outlets, even the local media outlets. We need to get the media more involved in what's going on behind those prison walls, and we need to do it quick. People are now getting frustrated. They're getting anxious. They're not getting the help they need behind those prison walls, and lately there's been stabbings in the prisons with both prisoners and with COs. So we need to start doing something about it. The media can go all the way over to other countries to report news in other countries when they can't even go into their own prisons in this country, when they can't go into the streets and talk with these people who are being abused and shot down, talk to these people who are committing crimes, find out what is going on. Why are there more than 2.3 million Americans incarcerated, the highest incarceration rate in the world? And some may say it's 2.1 million, but if they say that, they're going back a few years. Times have changed. People are being thrown into prison like cattle because of these large corporations making all kinds of money off of prison, prisons for profit. Prisoners are working for less than a dollar a day, and these big corporations are selling sneakers for $300 and more. They're making billions of dollars off of the incarcerated. In addition, there's so much inappropriate and harsh treatment and sentencing of the incarcerated individuals in the United States prisons. Why are there so many people in American prisons? Why is the media not going in to meet with these people to find out what's going on? The media doesn't want to get involved because the media is focused on fishes, animals, frogs, flowers. They need to get more involved in the serious things that are going on in the world today, especially in this country. Because this country is giving all kinds of money away to other countries, going all the way over to other countries. When this country is falling apart, this country is dying quickly. And yet, we have a media that doesn't even focus on the major problems. They don't focus on the major problem. It's all something good, something childish. There's a lot of things happening in the communities in this country. And sadly enough, there's a lot of victims. But they have to look at the victims who became offenders. They have to look at the offenders that became victims once inside. They have restorative justice programs in the country that are trying to get underway to try to bring people together to find out why these things are happening. I brought a warden on the show this past week, 27 years, from Amsterdam. He's been in the U.S. prison. He's taken a tour through prisons in Massachusetts and in New York. He's working with the advocates in Texas. He's going to be back on for the whole month of July. He will be coming on every Wednesday to talk about the various issues and areas that need to be reformed in this country. Mariam Jacobs, psychosocial therapist, has been in U.S. prisons. She wrote a book, and the name of the book is Suspended Values in Concentration Camps in Prison in the United States, comparing concentration camps to the United States prison system. We need to do something about it. The things that are going on in this country that's preventing this country from being like any other country and having maximum sentences of 25 years unless serious crimes such as terrorism, serial killing, and mass murders. No other country in the world has life sentences such that serious. When Franz Dahl was on the show, the former warden from Amsterdam, he said, yes, they do have life without parole. But he said they have 50 people serving life in that country. Can you believe it? 50 people serving life sentences in that country. 50, 5-0. Not 5 million, not 500,000. And that's the way it is in other countries. Unless it's very extreme. And what they do with the people who they eventually release is they treat them like human beings. They talk to them like they're human beings. They call them by their names, not numbers. They talk to them, not down to them, but to them and with them. The programs they have, they offer programs, appropriate programs, programs that are going to help the incarcerated. In this country, they pick and choose who they're going to allow to take programs. They target prisoners. They prevent prisoners. And the reason they prevent a lot of these prisoners from participating in any educational programs or work programs is so that when these individuals go up for parole, they have nothing, nothing at all to show for what they have done since they've been incarcerated. And then you hear these prison officials talking about how lazy these prisoners are to legislative members and other people. Think about it. No one questions prison officials even when they catch them in lies. And politicians have caught them in lies, I know for a fact. They have not challenged it. Some politicians are upset because a recent stabbing took place with a guard, a correctional officer. And I feel bad about it too. But what happens when it's a prisoner that got stabbed or got beaten or got assaulted or got abused, violated, tormented, tortured? Denied, bribed, provoked, harassed. What happens then? Where are the people that are supposed to be advocating for the incarcerated? People of influence, people in law, picking and choosing. That's what it's all about. It's who you know and who can make you look the best when you're in an organization, law firm, or politics. There are prisoners who have medical damage done to them, who have been begging for help, even to purchase a pair of footwear, one-time purchase of footwear, being denied for several years, and still has not gotten it resolved with all these influential people making calls. The Department of Corrections asking for release of information, signed releases. When these prisoners are writing and signing over and over and over again, where is the leadership? Where is the help for the incarcerated individual? You know, the public has finally gotten aware of all this because, as many of you notice, they've been advertising for correctional officers around the country and law enforcement. They're low on staff. So they're willing now to even hire high school dropouts who have an GED. If these correctional officers and prison officials behind those prison walls overseeing these prisoners, if the good ones would just report the bad ones, crime amongst prisoners and staff would not be happening. The good ones are afraid to say anything, or they don't want to say anything because they're afraid of their peers, what they might do. But what they don't realize is there's people out in the communities that are crazy, that will shoot or stab a police officer, a correctional officer, an official in a minute, because the hatred around the country is so strong because of the way these people behind the walls have been treated. A lot of innocent police officers and correctional officers and and officials, a lot of innocent ones, take the brunt of the punishment of their peers who are so corrupt. And their peers can't think too much of them if they're not going to try to change their ways, but expect the good ones to change their ways. We're living at a time now where what's right is no longer correct. People are accepting wrong. They're accepting all the evils rather than to stay on track on that narrow path to righteousness, to help, to do the right things. We are right now, we're in a spiritual battle. And these evil spirits, as well as the good spirits, are in flesh and blood. They're in people. And for those of you that know what's right, you will know if you're the right one. For those that are evil and don't care to step in and help, for those that are just making it more difficult for prisoners and people in the streets, for those who have loved ones that have gotten in trouble, but you have gotten them out of trouble because of your influence, because of your social status, because of your wealth, because of your titles, because of your uniforms, because of your positions in high places in this world. It's funny how people manage to get their own loved ones out, but yet are so quick to get the loved ones of others in those prisons. It's ironic how they don't focus on programs that work for the incarcerated, that they don't work with the department, and the Department of Mental Health should be working with politicians. They should be working with prisoners. They should be working with advocates. They should be out there because they know that all these people incarcerated are not incarcerated without some type of psychological or mental illness. They know a lot of these people that are serving time because of addictions, something they did while under the influence of some kind of drug or alcohol. They don't realize a lot of these people are doing substances. They're doing drugs and alcohol because a lot of them are trying to cover up trauma, trying to cover up pain that they went through. We have people that don't even do drugs and alcohol that are not even in prison that are worse off than many of those behind those prison walls. People in the communities who have a better than thou attitude, who judge people without even knowing everything about them or anything about them. This event that we're going to be having starting in 2 days, making calls, writing letters, and emailing legislative members, the media, the governors, and you can email them, write them, call them on any subject at all that you feel is in some form of injustice in this country. If you don't get them, leave their voicemails, blow up the voicemails with messages. Whatever injustices that you see occurring in this country, let it be known. But let the media know that they need to do more than travel to other countries for vacation and to get news on other countries when their own country's falling apart. Even our president needs to be focusing on this country because there's a lot going on in this country that is not right. Mass shootings all over the place. Every day you're hearing about it. Prior to coming on this show today, I was watching the news. There was some shootings here in Lynn, Massachusetts, Revere, Massachusetts, Boston, Massachusetts. We have a country that's so focused on money, fame, power, that they don't even care. They really don't care. But what they don't realize is when they leave this world, when their loved ones leave this world, they're going to leave with nothing because that's how they came in. And what they don't realize is even though maybe a lot of them go to church or believe in God and go to their synagogues and their mosques, what they don't realize is that there's going to be a time when we're all going to have to go before someone, a creator. We're going to be held accountable for what we don't do and what we do do in this world. There was a time when There was so much help out there for anyone and everyone. And it got to the point where younger people started coming on, changes started to be made, harsher on crime, all these things started to happen. And before you knew it or know it, we have mass incarceration. Other countries looking at us like we're some kind of joke. We have educated people in this country, but they don't have the wisdom to know. They don't have the wisdom. So what I am asking everyone to do, starting the day after tomorrow, June 1st, there's contact information to the media all over Facebook. CNN News, MSNBC, CBS News, ABC News. Get the numbers. If you don't have them, if you don't find them on Facebook, go on the internet and type in contact for these news reporters, news places. Look up news articles written about injustices to prisoners. Find out who's writing these articles and contact them. We will know by the end of June if, in fact, family members, advocates, friends, and even the incarcerated have made those daily calls, emails, or writing those letters. We will know because the media will be talking about it. It will be so overwhelming they will have to talk about it. We don't need to protest. No one needs to protest. No one needs to waste their time protesting. All they need to do is pick up a phone, write some emails, make some calls every day, even if it's only two or three calls a day, or two or three emails, or letter writing. To the media, legislative members, lawmakers, and to the governors. And also, I want to say, please do contact ACLU. Because ACLU has been denying prisoners left and right. Everybody's been talking about that throughout. Maybe they need to know that they need to get more involved. And also, mental health. Department of Mental Health. Contact the Department of Mental Health and let them know. They need to get more involved because these people in prison need help. Role models. Role models are not out there anymore for these youth. These kids have no one to look up to anymore. They see all these older ones, if they're not in prison, they're out on the streets with their pants hanging down to their behinds, using all kinds of language, vulgar language, which even some advocates use, unfortunately, not being professional. A couple of prisoners asked me to contact an advocate who is in a coalition. And I told those prisoners, I said, she's not going to respond. She's in a little clique. She won't respond. And when she did respond, she responded with the most vulgar language coming out of a woman's mouth. And I was taught not to use that kind of language. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people that do. But again, it goes to show respect. People incarcerated don't get that respect because they're being talked down. And they're being talked to just like that, from vulgar mouths, calling them animals all the time. When in fact, the animals are the ones that are non-caring, non-compassionate, cliquish, using all kinds of language and treating all kinds of people ignorantly. How can you hate somebody you don't even know? Because it's the person you don't know that would be the first person there for you if you needed someone. But we live in a society where people don't realize that. I'll tell you myself, years ago, I had so many people around me, I couldn't stand it. Today, I enjoy my privacy because it was just too overwhelming. But when something happens in your life, a tragedy happens, and you lose someone to either death or incarceration for life. Something happens because the very people that have always looked up to you, that have always bragged about you, that have always tried to make themselves look good by saying, I know her. Yeah, she works here, or she does this. But all of a sudden, when tragedy happens, these so-called friends turn their backs and walk the other way. And that's why I say, a lot of you might think that you're in the clique that you should be in, whether it be family members or friends. In the book of Micah and the Bible, and I think it's chapter 7, verses 5 to 7, it says, don't let your companions or family, you know, sometimes people just focus on family and friends. They don't focus on those that they don't know that are trying to be nice to them, that are trying to relate to them and understand them. But they want to be in with those who are going to make them look good, the multitude. In the book of Exodus 23, 1 to 3, it says, thou shalt not go with the multitude to do evil against the lowly ones. We're living in a society where everybody wants to go with the multitude because the multitude of the wealthy ones, the multitude of the popular ones, that shows me insecurity in the lives of people. When they're so insecure, they can't be think for themselves. They can't be their own brain or thought. They have to be with others to be accepted. They're such a needy, needy people. When you have to be following someone else's tail to fit in with them. I want everybody to make these calls, do the emails, write the letters, even if it's just for your own loved ones, but make it. Let's see something hysterical occur in this month of June to finally get the media involved in reporting two-sided stories or even three-sided stories, because there's always two or three sides to every story. You know, there's some prisoners who were considered high-profile cases because they left the country, even if they were first-time offenders or victims before becoming offenders. They were high-profile. But it wasn't the feds that go after them. It's the local police from the very communities that the offense takes place. People, police that know the people that have been harmed. And then when they get the person back, all of a sudden, it's no longer high profile. It's not even mentioned. No one even knows. But yet, it's all over the media. It's all over the internet. And this is why the media needs to go in and meet with these individuals, because they report one-sided stories. And there's always something behind those stories. Traumatic, traumatic experiences that a lot of prisoners go through, men, women, and youth. A lot of them go through a lot of pain, sorrow, and suffering, and ultimately end up in prison. A lot of them violated as teenagers or as adolescents or as children, too afraid to talk about what happened to them. They don't let their guard down until somebody comes into their lives that pretends to be loyal, and they open up to those people, that individual, whether it's a man or a female, they open up to those individuals, only to find out that those individuals are no different, that they're lying, deceiving, and corrupt, abusive, emotionally or physically. That's why a lot of people incarcerated don't want to let their guard down, because once they let their guard down, it's difficult, very difficult, even in the community, to get back to where you were. And there's a lot of people that take advantage of people who do not let their guard down, simply to see if they can get that person. You may not understand what I'm saying, but I will say there's a lot going on behind those prison walls. with those individuals, many of them, thousands of them, who ended up in prison. There's a story behind that, and the media needs to let them have a voice. The media needs to let them have a voice. And until we can get the media to pay attention, they won't do it. They will not give these prisoners a voice. And that's why I'm asking every parent, every mother, every father, every cousin, every nephew, every friend, every advocate, every grandmother and grandfather, nieces and nephews, make these calls. It doesn't entail leaving your home. It doesn't have anything to do with you even having to get dressed to go out of your home. Just make these calls. And again, the contact information should be all over the internet, especially in the groups, prisoner advocacy groups. And for those of you that can't find it, go on the internet, whatever state you're in, and type in your governor's name and asking for the contact information. It'll give you the numbers and everything else. Or go to the website and type in legislative members for whatever state you're in. And then get their addresses or their phone numbers. ACLU is always having numbers out there because they have so much on their website that they don't actually do. And a lot of you who have mentioned it as well have tried to get them involved to no avail. We want to talk about ending life's death penalty, because the death penalty, and also, like I say, there's a death penalty exposure with Mike Farrell. You might, if you're interested, you might want to join their group or their organization, because their focus is to end the death penalty. And even though we're looking at trying to end life sentences, we also have to look at ending death penalty, because the death penalty doesn't make sense that we should have a government that has the mentality to execute people who have committed fatal crimes, when in fact the government themselves are doing the exact same thing when they execute someone for executing someone. It doesn't make sense at all. And it gives mixed messages to the children out there and the adolescents out there. This is why we see so many mass shootings. We have these kids out there just going wild, shooting up everything they can and everywhere they can. What kind of message is that? To give the message that we, the government, want to execute these people that are executing. What the government should be doing is looking at trying to work with these individuals, trying to have group therapy, support groups. Let these prisoners sit in a group and talk about what happened to them throughout their lives. Try to work with them, not against them. Once they go into the Department of Corrections, they're pretty much forgotten. They're getting bits and pieces of luxury. With the taxpayers' dollars, the food is going to the staff. The prisoners get garbage. Programs are often offered to so few people. There was something that went around in the email from one of the coalitions and the other day, and they were talking about these good credit, good behavior credits or whatever that they were giving out at one of the prisons, good behavior credits. And somebody wrote back and said, well, that's the crock of bull, because all these prisoners said they never even heard of it. Well, lo and behold, it's not there. But yet the prison officials are saying they have this program that they provide to prisoners, good behavior credit. It doesn't happen. That's why when you make these calls to the media or the governors or wherever, also mention that they are talking about having programs in the prisons that don't exist. That don't exist. And we the public, we the people, we the government are listening to all this and believe in every word of it. So I hope everyone will join us starting this Thursday. And if you do make these calls or whatever, just give us a hit on Facebook and just say, I'm doing it, or I've done it, and I'm doing it still. Emails, phone calls, letter writing. And another thing that we're going to be focusing on, besides ending the death penalty, is ending life sentences and having maximum sentencing as other countries do. Put a label on it, 25 or 30 years. Changes occur every day. People are coming out of prison now, and they say they don't even know how to operate. They don't. So many things have happened since they've been in, and they've been in 25, 30 years. A lot of them are having difficult times trying to work a computer or a cell phone. There's places. I grew up on Cape Cod. The Cape has changed so much now. They say the Cape is drug infested. There's a lot of crime going on the Cape. When I was growing up, it was beautiful. It was quiet. It was quaint. I'm not a city person. I never was. Maybe that's why I can't mix in with cliques in Boston or any city, because I'm not used to the city. I don't like it. Never did. But these are the things that we have to look at. Changes happen every day, 7 days a week, 4 weeks, 4 days, 4 weeks a month, 12 months a year, 25, 30, 40 years. Can you imagine people still being in prison? There are people in prison who are in their 80s and 90s in wheelchairs with dementia, with Alzheimer's. What is the purpose? What is the purpose of keeping them in the prison? Just to say we're meeting our quota? We've got the number of prisoners for these big corporations? And don't just look at the big corporations, because I'm sure the people in the system also are benefiting, taking away property and keeping it, taking away books. Where is all the magazines going? Where are the magazines going that we are subscribing to for those inside that never get them? Where are those magazines going? Sports magazines, gymnastics, weightlifting magazines, religious magazines. Oh, I take that back. They get the religious magazines because the people taking all these magazines are not Christians. Nor are they believers of God. Followers of Satan is more like it. And I'm sure a lot of you who have children or loved ones inside, I'm sure a lot of you have had the same experience or have heard about the magazines, the tampering of mail. Another thing I'd like to have everybody do when you do make these calls, the United States Postal Service, it's supposed to be responsible for mail throughout the United States of America. When advocates have called about the mail tampering of prisoners, some of them were told that the U.S. Postal Service, by the U.S. Postal Service, that once the mail gets to the prisons, they have no more control over it. The prison mail room has control over it. The prison mail room staff are not from the United States Postal Service. They're with the Department of Corrections. So the United States Postal Service have a responsibility to go into the prison, to bring the mail into the prison, to the mail room maybe, but also to oversee, so that when prisoners do not get their mail, they can contact the United States Postal Service and somebody and the U.S. Postal Service will do an investigation. Also, contact the Department of Justice make those calls to the Department of Justice. They have a section for prisoners who want to file complaints. Many prisoners do not have that ability. Contact the Department of Justice and let them know that they also need to start going in periodically and doing unannounced visits. As I hear from families and friends, Families Against Mandatory Minimums has been trying to encourage all of us, to encourage our legislative members to go into the prison at least once or twice a year to give these people a voice. There's a few of them in Massachusetts that are doing just that. But unfortunately, when the staff at the Department of Corrections around the country, when they know that legislative members are coming in or they know there's going to be an investigation, they clean up their act. They give their department a clean bath. Everything's clean. The food is good. The show is good. And sometimes they bring out certain prisoners. So when anybody goes into the prison to visit, to investigate or whatever, they need to go in unannounced. Legislative members should not have to be ignored by the Department of Corrections. When they call the Department of Corrections or the prison system, the prison, on behalf of their constituents behind those prison walls, on behalf of prisoners behind the wall who are going through abuses, deprivation, provocation, harassment, again, torment, medical issues, permanent damage, hey, all over the country. WellPath is with 36 states. There's prisoners all over the country talking about the damages done to them, permanent damages. One prisoner, even in Pennsylvania, had surgery, a big boil after the surgery, fighting to get that taken care of. I don't know if it's been resolved now or not, but the last I heard from him, he was asking for the insurance company of WellPath because he was going to find out about filing a suit against WellPath. And yet, with all the thousands of lawsuits, and you can find it on the internet, WellPath, founder of WellPath, involved in corruption and bribery. And yet, the Department of Corrections is still contracted with them. These are the things that need to be brought to the media's attention. And if we can't do that much, then we're failing our loved ones, and we're failing our prisoners. We're failing the men, women, and youth behind those prison walls and in the community. Well, that's what I wanted to say. I wanted to let everybody know this is what's going to be going on in a couple of days. And we will know by the end of the month or maybe even the middle of the month. And if enough calls, letters, and emails are written, we may hear in a week's time from the media and others in power about the mass calls, emails, and letter writing. We need to do something. Because not only do we have mass incarceration, we have a high rate of suicides in the prison. We have a, you know, families travel. A lot of times when the loved ones are transferred to other states, families are traveling. I remember there was a family from New York that came all the way to Massachusetts to visit a loved one, only to be denied when they came. Mother was around, I think there were three children with her. She was crying because she traveled all that distance to see her son, only to be denied and away, traveling all the way from New York alone with three children. I remember visiting an incarcerated individual one time in Pennsylvania. I don't know if it was Huntington or Smithfield, or maybe it was one of the others, Greater Fit, I think. And here, I'm in the visiting room. Everybody's in the visiting room talking and having a quiet time in the visiting room, enjoying their loved ones. And all of a sudden, some guard started yelling at this man so loud. The mother was crying. The wife was crying. The children were crying. It was sad. I was getting ready to get up to say something, and the prisoner said, no, don't say anything. Because they felt that it would be more retaliation on him. But that man was, after the wife and the three children started to walk away, they took that man out of the place. And someone said, well, what was he doing? He must have been doing something. Were they kissing? Were they hugging? No. They were sitting there, and he was enjoying his little kiss. But they wanted to make him feel like nothing. That's what these guards do sometimes. They want to make them feel like nothing, even the prison officials, because it makes those people look bigger when they can bring somebody down. They pick on the helpless and the hopeless. People commit crimes. There's good and bad behind those prison walls. That's all I can say. People need to look at the good and the bad. You know, Mariam Jacobs tomorrow will be on the show. Mariam Jacobs, a psychosocial therapist that wrote the book, Suspended Values in Concentration Camps and Prison. She will be on tomorrow. And you can call in and you can ask her what it does to somebody mentally, psychologically, when they're continuously talked down to and treated like animals. Deprived, caged. People that have dogs and they keep them in a cage for so long, when they let the dog out, the dog is aggressive. Well, that's what's going to happen, and that's what is happening in prisons around the country. Prisoners will treat a dog better than a human being will. A lot of prisoners behind those prison walls love animals. But unfortunately, there's a lot of people, human beings, that hate human beings and treat them like animals. And it's terrible that this thing happens. It's unfortunate. We have a caller, 203.
Hey, it's DJ. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, CJ?
Not too bad. Thank you so much for doing this.
I want you to talk about your thoughts on all of this. Oh, first of all, CJ, can you introduce yourself to the audience? CJ is also an advocate. Just introduce yourself to the audience as well.
Absolutely. So I am the lead organizer for Black and Brown United in Action and a host of The Son of Black and Brown. We are a grassroots organization located in New Haven, Connecticut, and we are invested in uplifting and empowering the voice of the voiceless.
Thank you. Now, tell us what your thoughts are on all of this. I don't know how much you heard of the radio, on the radio show, but what are your thoughts on all the things that are happening in this country, especially behind those prison walls?
Well, you know, living in Connecticut, which was Republican for a long time, Republican ran, I should say, it's very conservative here. And then I look at what's happening in Florida, which even though we may not be the same size, in terms of politics, it's the same type of thing. I say all that to say here in Connecticut, while we talk about reentry and mass incarceration, still have a lot of work to do. I mean, I think about what happened to the prisoners during COVID, how they were treated, how many prisoners we lost to COVID. We never got an answer to those questions. I recall sending in a Freedom of Information request to the Department of Corrections. I also know of a few prison guards and, I should say, Department of Correction employees of how they have been treated because they're Muslim or black. So there's definite bias there. And out of that bias comes the mistreatment, both physically, mentally, all of it. It's terrible.
Exactly. You know, I'm glad you were bringing some of these things up because this is very important. As I started to say, within this country, there's an issue, the injustices that go on with the greed, the need for the craving for more money with the wealthy and the people in uniform, the power, the hatred because of someone's pigment. You know, this thing about race is really, I cannot understand why people would have such hatred for somebody that's human, that's just of pigmentation in the skin, when they can have black dogs, they can have brown dogs. I mean, it doesn't make sense. And we all think the same. We all do the same. But the thing that bothers me is so many people who claim they're not racist are going along with all of this. Now, I understood that the NAACP has been asking everyone not to travel to Florida because of DeSantis. Actually, he's recruiting or promoting evil. He's promoting war. You know, these are people in this country who are attacking this country, the democracy. These are people, these are domestic terrorists, even when they're presidents or running for president. And when they stop promoting and they start becoming domestic terrorism in this country, then they need to give the prisoners back their voting rights. And they need to take the voting rights away from these very people who have done harm to the Capitol. And when people have to worry about traveling to Florida or anywhere else because of their race, this is outrageous. Because we've been living in this country for years and years and years, born and raised in this country, and then all of a sudden, they're going to be told where they can go and where they can't go. They're going to stop teaching the kids history, black history in school. These are things that really bother me.
We gotta look at it for what this is. We're going back in time instead of moving forward, and people need to understand that, right? And it starts from the schools to the law books, right? And in between that, you know, we have to realize what's really happening. The school-to-prison pipeline right now is atrocious. We're preparing our children to fail. In the state of Florida right now, you could get a gun, a concealed weapon, with ease. They are depending on you being, as they call it, a law-abiding citizen. A black man was chased and three white men for no reason. This happened 3 weeks ago, about, right? Not only that, but we've seen the number of shootings. I don't know if folks know, but this Memorial weekend, we had 71 mass shootings. That meant somebody walked into a crowd, and one of those shootings happened in Florida. Now, the law that DeSantis passed, it doesn't go into effect until July. Here's my thing. If you're going to extend the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms, and say, well, everybody should have the right to bear arms, then you need to go back to how you incarcerate people. And not only that, but you need to deprivatize the penal system, the correction system, whatever you want to call it. Because what people don't realize is mass incarceration is really profit-driven. They make money. They're making a lot of money, and the cost to us in the community is our people are coming back. If they come back into community, they're damaged. They don't get jobs. They get labeled. They're punished all over again. Now, am I saying that there are certain crimes that I wouldn't tolerate? I would never say that because I would never want to see a rapist back in community, okay? There are certain crimes that I cannot look past. Somebody who decides to go and shoot up a bunch of people for no reason. Let's not forget in Florida, right before COVID, Florida had a mass shooting. People forget. And I am of the belief that because of COVID, some of us decided not to think about certain things. We forgot about certain things, or we just didn't know. So we have to educate people or re-educate people. But people have to face the fact we have a problem. Our prison system is overcrowded, right? They expect teachers to serve 50 students in a classroom, and then expect correctional officers to supervise 20 people at a time, and then they expect it all to work the same. What's wrong with that picture? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. You know, I as I say, there's a lot of people that they claim to not be prejudiced. They claim to have all these friends that are of color, but yet, why aren't they out there advocating for changes as we are talking about it? Why aren't they out there advocating? You know, I could say to somebody, you're my best friend. I'm going to stand by you no matter what. I'm going to. But if somebody is bullying or provoking or calling name calling or whatever, but if I don't do anything about it, if I just tell you and a few other people and our cliques or whatever, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything, because if you're going to be really non-prejudiced, you're going to be out there fighting for those people that are being oppressed, that are being talked about, that are being hated because of the pigmentation on their skin, of their skin. I don't see too many people doing that. And we will see what happens for the month of June with people making these phone calls, writing these letters and emailing. We will see how many people are talking and how many people are actually with us.
Well, people need to remember, united we bargain, divided we beg. So, you know, this is the type of thing that is no cost. What I mean is that a link to email a letter is not a big deal.
No.
If you can't make a phone call, send an email. It's very simple. If you need help or you don't know what to say, reach out. But do something, because that could be your relative. That could be your loved one. You could be the one wishing that other people pay attention. In my country, in Trinidad and Tobago, we have a little saying. We say prevention is cheaper than cure. What that means is you take care of something before it becomes a bigger thing. If it means addressing it piece by piece by piece, then that's what you do. And that's what we're doing, because this is a hard nut to crack, and it's going to require us as a community getting up and standing up. Let's be real here, people. If we really were to break it down, the mass incarceration, and Leona, correct me if I'm wrong, and we were to look at the logistics of this thing and to look at who is being punished by crime and race, I'm telling you, we might see some stuff that might be like, wait, what? We have like 15 black or brown men serving time for marijuana, and the minimum sentence from each state varies for these things, right? So what are we really solving? Nothing.
They legalized marijuana. That's
right.
Why I don't understand why these people are still behind prison bars. Well, I understand now.
Right. It's being done by design. They make money, right? Because what a lot of people fail to realize, you know, the prison system in America is one of the biggest in the world. We also have the longest sentences, and we have some of the most egregious crimes, criminals. But more than that, it's a profit-driven system. It is a means of maintaining poverty. It is a means of justifying the use of excessive force, and it is a means of saying why we need more police. Capitalism is successful where there is a lack of empathy. And what a lot of people need to do, we need to reconsider certain things how we look at people. Notice, as I had mentioned before, when you see a movie about the world ending, very, very rarely do you ever see a black person saving the world.
Mm-mm.
Our image in media is always negative, from movies to mass media. I mean, there's so many other crimes happening in my own town. But if I were to look at Channel 8 or, you know, Fox or anybody else, you don't see that version of what's going on. You see what they want you to see. Right now in Connecticut, ACLU Smart Justice and Stop Solitary CT have been demanding that the public and inhumane frisking and searching, the strip searching of prisoners, to stop. What do I mean? As it stands right now, correction officers could pull a prisoner out and have them strip naked in front of everybody. That's inhumane. That's not necessary. How would you feel if that were you? Would you want that to be you? And the answer is no. So just because it's not you doesn't make it acceptable. But just because we're fighting for it doesn't mean that that person deserved it. You know what I'm saying? We need to stop criminalizing people, and we need to face this for what it is. This is a profit-driven system, and it's not just profitable in the sense of the prisoners make, you know, shoes or different things, license plates, whatever we want to say. The truth is other vested parties profit from mass incarceration. It gives the government a reason to say we need more police. It gives the government to be more stringent when it comes to black and brown people, and it's a way to maintain poverty.
They will try to put the fear in the public, and I think that's what it is. They blow things way out of proportion. Although I noticed these mass shootings began after there was a protest, I forgot what state it was in, where that 17-year-old kid came from another state into this state where the protest was going on, the peaceful protest, and he shot two people, and he had an assault weapon, and his case was dismissed. The judge dismissed his case, and after that, that's when we started hearing about all these teenagers, all these youth doing these mass shootings around the country.
Absolutely, because here's the thing. As Charlie Min, he does a lot of documentaries on these mass shootings, right? And one of the things that he's really good about is really telling the stories of the victims. Stop glorifying these people. Most of these shootings are being committed by white people. But when the white person commits the crime, they get the empathy. When we do it, oh, she's an immigrant. That's why we shouldn't have immigrants here. Oh, she's black. You know how black people are. Our image in history has been stained for too damn long, and we need to stop letting them use our history as a weapon against us. We hear about the slavery. We hear about all the things, all the reasons why they had to imprison us. And what we need to realize, and again, I'm going to draw attention to COVID, because COVID took up a lot of our mental capacity. A lot of people didn't even think or consider the fact that while they were dealing with COVID, so were the prisoners, right? Out here in Connecticut, I could speak to Connecticut and Massachusetts, the detention facilities, all of it was terrible. You had, there was no, how do you social distance in a prison, first of all? How do you do that? And that would have been the opportunity right there for them to say, let's look at some of these sentences. Let's see who we could get out of here. They did not do that. Instead, they allowed people to be cramped on top of each other. And let me say this, these folks aren't even getting a decent meal. My God, the average prison meal costs, what, like $1.25 or something? And that's with inflation. So just imagine, what are they eating? That's not right. We had a prisoner who got eaten alive by bed bugs. That's insane. Mm-hmm. They're not cleaning these rooms, you know. There's no type of reform happening. It's more like sit and suffer. And, you know, really the difference between solitary confinement and being in a cell, it's not that much of a difference, really, when you really break it down. And we have to wonder if instead of using the prisons as an institution to punish, we actually made it reform, what would happen?
We'd be like other countries. We'd be doing much better with our incarcerated institution. Much better.
If you told me that you would go into the prisons and you would see things, first of all, you won't see densely populated. If you told me that legislators and lawmakers, more specifically, use COVID as an opportunity to say, let's reconsider some of these charges that we're charging people. Let's be real here. During a time like COVID, why are you allowing the Department of Motor Vehicles to mess with people? Seriously. Because sending up their notices late, or you're not getting it at all, but then they blame you for not paying your ticket, or they blame you for not paying your fine. And next thing you know, you're in a courtroom, and if you can't afford it, next thing you know, you're behind bars. That's an example of an incarcerated person that should not be there. Why are we always using prison as the answer? It's not the solution.
No, it's not. And you know, these things that it's getting to the point where people are just, I can't understand how any human being can know all these things that are happening inside those prison walls, behind those prison walls, and do nothing about it. I don't know how people can just ignore it.
No, well, that's what I'm saying to you. The thing is with COVID, what I learned, right? So out here in New Haven, Connecticut, we were doing a lot of outreach because we also work with a lot of the undocumented people and those who are without privilege, a.k.a. the black and brown people, right? And so in that work, you get privileged to a lot of things. And one of the things that we found out really quickly was how prisoners and those in detention centers and correctional facilities were being treated. The guards were being allowed, they were being tested every day. They were being allowed to be vaccinated. The prisoners were dying, and nobody cared. Why? Because they're in prison. That's wrong. That's inhumane. And you would think, after all the lives lost behind COVID, shouldn't that be more reason for us to say, maybe we need to sit down and rethink all of this? Like, really? What did we learn from COVID? The answer is nothing. Because if we did, somebody like Ron DeSantis would not have the level of power and respect that he has. That's scary.
You know, when you think about it, Donald Trump's niece, I think it was his niece, came on national TV to talk about her uncle and his psychological being, and people just completely ignored it. Well, that's the same thing that happens when people know that these things are going on behind those prison walls, and they completely ignore it, especially people in power and that have influence that can do something. I believe legislative members are afraid of the Department of Corrections because they don't challenge them. And what happens is the Department of Corrections, the prison officials, they find it humorous because they have control even over the most highest people in politics. What I wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts on, and you mentioned COVID. My belief is that prisoners should have the opportunity to decide for themselves whether they want to be double celled or not, especially those who are in for long terms or life sentences. I can't understand how we have a government that can put two people, and sometimes more than two, in these little small cells. Everybody's
right.
Different. Some prisoners are very meticulous. Some prisoners, they're clean, while other prisoners, they're just, you know, they can be pretty dirty and smelly and everything.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, when we started working on the COVID outreach, because we were trying to get our people vaccinated. All right. Here's the reason, and I'm going to be blunt about it. We saw the lines of white people lining up to get vaccinated. We're like, oh, hell no. You're not going to stay here and, you know, get vaccinated in my neighborhood. I don't get vaccinated? That's crazy. So we started organizing to get access to the vaccination because we should have that access and choice. Here's the other part of it. Some people, due to whatever reason, medical or whatever, may not necessarily agree physically with the vaccination, right? There are cases of people who, due to their medical condition, their doctor said, look, this vaccination will do more harm than cure, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the choice should still be yours. When you consider what's going on right now with healthcare, and especially state-funded healthcare or federally funded healthcare, a lot of people no longer qualify because we declared COVID to be over, which means any type of COVID relief is now done, which also means any exceptions are also done. So now we're seeing a lot of people are receiving the letter saying they, you know, their food stamps were reduced or whatever benefit they had is going down, right?
Mm-hmm.
I say all that to say, if this is what is happening to us who are not incarcerated, consider for 5 seconds what it must be like to be behind bars. You don't even know what diseases you might have contracted from the food or allergies. you might have, like, your bodily functions aren't the same. We have prisoners reporting when they are released that, you know, their bodily functions are different now. Because why? You know, when they were incarcerated, the food affected their organs, right? I've heard stories of people telling me, like, not so much their physical organs, but their whole psyche was affected. So in other words, they still wake up at the same time they used to when they were in prison. It's a lot of different moving parts. Now, you put all of that in perspective and you think about for 5 seconds what it must be like. You don't have a choice over anything, right? But then you hear, like we found out here in Connecticut, that the prison guards and the correctional officers specifically, they were boasting about being vaccinated. They were mocking the prisoners. They said, I'll live, you won't. That's the kind of thing they were saying. So we started to mobilize and say, no. People are dying. Prisoners are dying, right? Because what the Department of Corrections was doing, they were unionizing and organizing and saying, look, if our workers have to deal with COVID exposure, we should get a pay increase. This is what I mean about the profit-driven. We said, to hell with that, right? Your profit, your pay increase is irrelevant right now. Until you give access to that vaccination to prisoners, it doesn't matter. Because why should you get a pay increase while our people die? Now, if the prisoner, like anybody else, decides not to be vaccinated, they should have that right. That's what I think. It should be well within their own personal choice. I am a vaccinated person. I have, you know, allergies and sinus issues. I have breathing issues, respiratory issues. Both my doctors, one who is a Nigerian, the other is from India, highly recommended it. And they were very honest with me. They were like, we had this conversation very plainly. And I think it all starts there in terms of deciding if to vaccinate or not. But back to the prisoners, they should have the choice. It's all about people treating people like human beings. And that is not what's happening in the prison system. It's not at all. Guns have more rights than black and brown people. A gun has more privilege and rights than black and brown people. The fact that the state of Florida is about to change a gun law, this is the same state that a man walked into a McDonald's and shot and killed people in less than an hour and walked out. Or he tried to. He eventually ended up getting killed, thank goodness. But Florida is home to several mass shootings. And now they're about to legalize, you know, carrying of a gun. Now, what's also going to happen with that, you're going to see, I predict, an increase in incarceration, because remember, they're also saying law-abiding citizens. That's code for, we're going to find a reason that you're not lawful. We're going to pull up Ray Ray's record and find out that, you know, back in 2003, he got arrested for having marijuana. So now he's not lawful, and therefore we found him with a gun, so now he's going to serve 15 years. You see how that just went? That law is not going to apply to everybody. But guess who's going to pay the biggest price for it? Physically, financially, and lawfully? And it'll be us.
It's a shame. You know, just like I said in the case of the wrongfully convicted, there's so many wrongfully convicted. There's two female prisoners in the state of Missouri who were wrongfully convicted, have been in prison all these years. There's a female prisoner in Georgia. There's two male prisoners in Missouri that I know of. And there's so many of these people of color that are being penalized, that are being set up. And again, I still think that they should allow them to be in single cells, because like you were just saying, it's not right. But this is how they demean people. They try to mess with their minds, their whole being. It shouldn't be.
No, and the thing about it is, with what folks fail to realize is that the mental impact of imprisonment is the part that is the saddest part. Because remember, it's being claimed to be something that's being done to remedy societal issues. but it really isn't. And the more aggressive they get with the way that they treat prisoners, it's just going to make the poverty worse. Because here's what's going to happen. You go and you serve your time, and you get treated like crap. You come back out into society, you say, aha, I made it out. Man, I made it. But then you can't get a job. And you're trying to resist all the temptations that put you behind bars in the first place. But there's no recovery for you. There's no real help. You end up working with caseworkers and case managers who don't really want to deal with you, to treat you like a number. You get frustrated. You can't find a job. Your record keeps coming back in your face, and guess where you end up all over again. That's what really happens most times.
Yeah, right back in prison. And I think it's meant that way. They do it purposely for that reason. They do it purposely.
Absolutely, because again, look at what I just said. If you think about that cycle in fruition, right, you're maintaining poverty. Because what's going to happen is, if you're in and out of prison, you're in and out of prison, right? You decide to make guns that accessible. You're giving these kids and everybody else a reason to pick one up now. You're just giving them a reason. Then they're going to do something, and they're going to end up where? And that record is going to stick on them. And then anything they do, they could sneeze too hard and get arrested again, and guess where they end? Right back up. Because, again, people don't realize some of these sentences, as you rightfully pointed out, the wrongful convictions are actually, there's a lot. And COVID was time and reason to say, let's look at this once and for all. And they didn't do it. Why? Because, as you also pointed out, they like to maintain it. It makes sense. It makes money. Right? It keeps the rich rich, and it keeps who poor. It's the cotton field all over again. That's what the prison is. It's a big cotton field. That's what it should be realized and accepted as, because that's what it is. The slaves who die, oh well. And then they brutalize who they want to, and they make a show of it.
You know, going back, it seems so strange to see us going backwards after all the progress that was made. It just doesn't make sense that people are that determined to destroy people of color. You know, this country was built, United States, everybody from all over the world. But where did the United States get the most money to build the United States? They got it from Africa, because that's where all the gold and the diamonds were. You know, that's where the beginning was, the motherland. This is where it started. And that's what built this country. And yet, they have this determination to destroy the very people from the roots of the
country. But listen to what you're saying, Leona. It does make sense. Because if we think about what was going on in America in 2019, you're right, we were making progress. But then COVID happens, right? And then the government decides they'll play this mental mind game with us. First of all, even Jay-Z is quoted as saying he couldn't live in his house under lockdown for more than 4 months. It gave him anxiety. The world got a taste of what solitary confinement and imprisonment felt like for the first time, all of us. For the first time, everybody had to stay home. You had the same restrictions as a prisoner, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, after we started going lockdown, they play this mental game with us. One minute they say we're partially open. Next minute they say only these businesses open. They keep playing with us. And COVID did, it took up so much mental space. That's why I said we have to re-educate people on a lot of things. Either they don't want to look at it, they don't know about it, or they forgot. And that's why we have to do what you're doing right now and talk it out loud, because the narrative is what they don't want us to tell anymore. Again, if you look at organizing, social justice organizing, the social justice movement pre-COVID to now, you'll see a change. Mind you, in between this time, we watched George Floyd call out for his mother. So you have to ask yourself, if we saw all of that, but people still aren't getting active, what's the problem? The problem is we got so caught up with COVID, we forgot a lot of things. We got to remember now. We got to remind ourselves. We got to re-educate ourselves. We got to face it. We have to face it because, the cotton field is getting bigger and more bold now, right? And if they're going to do this thing, what they're doing in Florida, best believe, because that's another thing people fail to realize. When the government makes these aggressive moves and do things like what's about to happen in Florida, the prisoners also pay a price because now they're going to punish them more. And if you were waiting for your case to be heard, they're going to find a reason to delay it, right? They're going to, there's all of a sudden there's going to be all these loopholes because that's who also pays. That's the cotton field. The cotton workers always have to end up getting punished.
I don't know what to say. It's just frustrating to just think about it. I said it the other day. When we were growing up, and I'm sure it happened in your family, our parents, they raised us, teaching us love, how to love one another, how the love that they shared with us, and teaching us all these things. Can you imagine all of these people, these kids growing up to become men today that have all this hatred in them? Their fathers and mothers, what kind of bringing up do they have? They spent so much time teaching their children how to hate people of a different race or culture. Then they could have spent all that time loving their children and teaching their children how to love others. And we would not have crime today. But these children, these adults.
But listen to what you're saying, Leona. Listen to what you're saying. What you just gave was a solution, which would have carried on what Malcolm did, what Martin did, what the Black Panthers did. I'll say this to you. When black and brown people organize, it scares the hell out of the government. And for good reason. What you're saying is not wrong, but they don't want to do that because what COVID reminded certain people of is they have to maintain power. And how do you do that? You got to maintain the poverty. You got to maintain the crime. And you definitely have to maintain that prison system. So hell yeah, I'm going to arrest you now because you didn't pay your parking ticket that you didn't even know you had, or your speeding ticket that you didn't have an opportunity to contest. I'm going to put you in a jail filled with all kinds of criminals. And then when you get out, I'll make sure you have very sparse resources. What part of that sounds like reform to you? Not one part. And
not
in this
one.
Whole scheme of things, I'm going to promote family separation, and I'm going to destroy communities, right? Because we've seen a surge in single parents, specifically black and brown women. Why? Who's in jail? The daddy. Daddy gone. But, again, this maintains the poverty, and it also entices the crime.
That's why we need our leaders, but our leaders, and that's what we haven't seen for a long time. Even when Farrakhan was in, a lot of people may not have liked him, but he had it together because he didn't allow a lot of these things to take place. The difference between Martin Luther King and Louis Farrakhan was one was too passive and the other one was just the opposite. One was not extreme enough. And look
right.
What happened.
And let's not forget, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, Leona, that camera is the white man's narcotic. That's a big statement because one of the things that happened since the Civil Rights Movement, we started to throw our thrust into the white allies to get the job done. And what did Malcolm X say? Be wary of the white liberals. Like you said, one was too passive. And one was aggressive, but that's what we have to be. We can't do anything less. And nobody said we couldn't be aggressive and peaceful, right?
That's right. People get upset with me because I'm assertive, I'm going to say there's advocates in this state, they don't even know me. But like I said, these are people in their clique. And our people are sometimes naive because they fall right into it, conquer and divide and conquer, right? And that's what happens in a lot of these places, in this state as well, especially.
But of course it is. That's what I'm saying. Connecticut was a red state for a long time, Republican ran. There is no logistical way that we could have been Republican for that long, and there's still not a high level of conservative behavior. That doesn't make political sense. The thing is, what brought out the progress were the people who came into Connecticut, the people like me, the people who moved from out of state into Connecticut, brought those values. They brought them in, but they also encouraged them. And that's what encouraged other people who were probably living here before or living here a long time or whatever to start to think differently. That's why I say I'm paying attention to Florida, because the same way that Florida is very conservative, so are a lot of these other states. And people need to see that for what that means. Look at what this man is doing in Florida. And he's not done yet. Because here's what, like I said, here's what's going to happen. That law is going to take in effect July 1st. They already published a story earlier, what was it, yesterday, of the young black man shooting another young black man in a crowd and injuring 9 people. You think that was by mistake? No, it's
not.
It
happened here in Massachusetts this weekend. You know, it's happening everywhere, all over. It's every single day you're hearing about it from some state.
But who are you seeing? What are the images we're seeing? We're seeing the black and brown people. Why don't you show us what these white people doing? Okay, here's the thing that us in the black and brown community, I'm not saying this is right, but in our communities, the shootings that happen here, 9 out of 10 times, or maybe I'll be less generous with that, 70% of the times, like, you know, you'd find out that there was a backstory to that. It's like a clapback. However, we've seen many times where a white man will pick, why would you need a rifle in your house? I remember being on a coalition call about COVID recovery. And one person was saying they're going to go buy guns. Earlier this year, I was listening to the public testimony for HB 6667, which is an act concerning gun control in Connecticut. And let me tell you, Leona, the testimony was sickening. White person after white person, a couple of black people, not that many, like a sprinkling, if that. And it was so sad to watch, because of all things you're concerned about maintaining your access through an economic crisis, you want to make sure that you have a gun, a bulletproof vest, and ammunition for you and your children. What?
Mm-mm.
Are you serious?
That reminds me of the time in Texas when they wanted to arm the teachers with guns. Can you imagine teachers teaching children and adolescents in school having guns in the school?
Did you ever imagine having the day where you'll have to do, I remember doing the hurricane drill. I remember doing the drills for, you know, if we have lights out and stuff. Now you have to teach children how to deal with an active shooter. This is sad.
You know, they never came out with this idea. This is an idea that they never even came out with. If they would put those windows, windows in the schools, so that they were bulletproof, so that if somebody goes in and starts shooting, they can't shoot through those windows. That would prevent, would eliminate the need for any teachers to have weapons. But this is another mentality that our government has. They don't think about those things because they are thinking too much about money. These glass windows, they could put it, install in those schools and across the country, windows that cannot be touched with these weapons. But they don't think about that. They want to arm everybody with weapons.
No, because they're not thinking about, this is what I mean. This is why the image of prisoners and crime is so important. Because when you see those images, like, it always, whenever it's a white person, like, you could go right now and Google and search, and you'll find all these documentaries on these different criminals and what they did. And the empathy and the understanding, like, the fact that somebody would try to legitimize why the Columbine shooting happened. That level of understanding is never given to our people. Ray Ray and to Gina deserve to be in jail for that marijuana. Okay? That shoplifting charge deserves to be 25 years. That is foolishness. That's foolishness. Why don't we talk about white-collar crimes? Let's talk about what really happened in 2008 and what we expect probably happened these last 4 years.
Yeah, really.
But you
you don't see that level of criminalization for that, right? But let some of our people go do sex work, right? Because they're trying to survive, because sex work is real work. Let's say that part, right? Because it's not like they get a pension. It's not like they get time off. You don't get any benefits. You don't get nothing. And you're out there risking your life and everything else with it, right? And you get treated like crap. Sex workers are walking prisoners, really, when you think about it, because everywhere they go, they're being treated like a prisoner, right? Now, you don't get that level of critique for those people who are misusing nonprofit funds. Ooh, what did I just say?
Exactly.
My God. Oh, my God. Or what about all the people who misuse the ARPA funds to hire their friends and family? Oh, no. What did I just say? Leona, ooh.
You know, I ran an organization mm-hmm. from 2004 right up until I'm still doing it, but I stepped down. But anyway, I have never had funds. Everything has been out of my pocket. That's why I am broke. But I will say, I registered the organization with universities around the country, law schools. I was getting volunteer, paralegal. I was getting law students, criminal justice majors. All of these students were anxious to join organizations like this because they wanted the experience or they wanted to do their internship. So when people say they have to have money to run their organization, and once they get that money, they don't do anything for anybody behind those prison walls or whatever. But this is what it's all about. You don't really need a lot of money to run an organization when you can get volunteers. I registered the organization with volunteermatch.com, with United Way. While I'm on the show, I've got from law students that want to do some volunteer work. But right now I'm considering closing down the organization because it's becoming too much. But the thing is, they don't need a lot of these, even the lawyers, you know, all these legal services and things like that. They don't really need funding that they get, but when they get it, they pick and choose who they want to use that funding on, which is sad that they
absolutely. Well, wait a minute. Let's hold on. Let's continue that gatekeeping around nonprofits, right? Because here's the thing: when you go to apply for funding, they make these grant applications so complicated, right, and so long-winded. It's not made for the black and brown people who want to start something to really serve the people on the ground. It's not. No, let the guy or the woman or whoever who had the money handed down for them wake up one morning with a conscience and decide they want to start a food pantry. All of a sudden, the loopholes disappear. Cash rules everything around me. That's what Wu-Tang said. And the same thing applies to nonprofit. And the truth is, if we had more black and brown nonprofits that serve the prison population, we could at least see something, some kind of progress towards reform. But they try to keep it away from the table.
There was a time when they did. You know, these organizations, I say even with National Action Network, with Al Sharpton, with NAACP, with Black Lives Matter, they've got all this, they get this funding, but what they did, they withdrew from the penal system to put their focus on children and education and anything that's going to bring in more money and not have to go through all the difficult.
Let me tell you why. Because here's the thing, and that's my disappointment with the BLM movement. They should have never done that, right? We have a lot of political prisoners. We have a lot, too many, right? And we need to be real about that. The reason why they don't want to touch it is, again, the way this prison system is systemically designed. It's privatized for a reason. There are certain gatekeepers there. There are people who are making money. These are the people who have the ability to decide if you get funding for other things. It's a whole big game. But see, this is why we need to unite and say enough is enough now. We need to take our power back. And we need to say, look, this is wrong. I have heard stories from correction officers, Muslim correction officers, who, you know, they're being treated badly. They get hazed. They get harassed by their coworkers. stand there and watch while racist correction officers exert their power on black and brown people. You see what I'm saying? It's a whole
system.
No
one challenges.
There are people.
This is it. No one challenges.
Right.
And unfortunately, what's happening with that, with no one challenging, it's not going to get better. It's like when someone knows that they're not being challenged, like I said with the legislative members not challenging the DOC, DOC is looking at them as a joke. The DOC is lying to them left and right and laughing because they know that these legislative members,
You know who else needs to challenge the DOC? Really? Department of Labor, and I'll tell you why. The Department of Labor is one of the most underfunded departments in all the departments. It's up there next to that with anything with environmental. But yet, these are two departments that are so beneficial to the progress of our communities, right? Yet, they're underfunded and under-resourced for a reason. Department of Labor, on that premise alone, should really look at department, because here's the thing. Department of Correction in every state is guaranteed to get an increase every year. Every single year, every single city, it's on the budget line. And who pays for that will be everybody else, especially the Department of Labor. The Department of Labor has not seen an increase into their budget in over 15 years. That's unheard of. The cost of living has gone up, right? We don't have as many support services because, and that's the other part with the nonprofit part, right, the income and asset limit. So when people say things like prisoners get to live off the system, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know that there's certain financial restrictions. And even when they do qualify, they're not getting a bunch of money with that. They're not. Mm-hmm. These are human beings too, right? And these are the ones who make it out. What about the ones who are behind there? What about the ones who are incarcerated right now? They don't get internet access. They don't get enough phone access. Bad food. They don't even know what diseases they might be carrying. Remember, they're sharing bathrooms. Some of them are being sexually assaulted. That's a whole other topic. Tell me why we have female prisoners who are not pregnant, but you don't hear about that. Why?
Lowell Prison, it was so bad, everybody heard about it, but Lowell Prison is just one female prison with all of that going on. And the Department of Justice, they need to start investigating these prisons. They really need to start going in. But, you know, I was going to say, CJ, we're running out of time. We ran out of time, really. I'm going to be picking up on this Thursday. I was wondering if you come on, I wanted to ask you about how in your country, the sentencing, how it works and how that goes. And also, I was going to say real quickly, I recently learned that they're going to be, the correctional officers are going to have to start wearing body cams now. And they were talking about it on the news not too long ago, saying that the Department of Corrections wants to pay these correctional officers more for having to wear their body cams. And the way I look at
what it, I mean?
These body cams are supposed to be worn to ensure that the prisoners are not going to be abused or whatever the case may be.
Right.
But yes, they're going to be paid for wearing them. It doesn't make sense to me at all. And I wanted to talk more about
this. No, it does not. That should be part of your uniform. That should be part of your job. And again, here's a perfect example of what I just said. They're going to try to legitimize that cost that they're about to pass on. Who do you think is going to pay for that? They have to balance the budget. So realistically speaking, and I know we're at time, but just briefly, what, you know, you got to have the expenses, you know, they have to be balanced out. That cost right there, they're going to try to find a way. They're going to bring the union into that, and they're going to say, well, if we're going to have to pay for that, we're going to have to take away from this.
And the union is this is the reason why everybody's afraid to go up against the DOC, even the legislative members, I believe, is because they have to deal with the union. That's why I say when people start making these calls, writing these letters, and also, I forgot, the United Nations, I put that out there, the United Nations contact information for everyone too. We need to contact the United Nations because there's a policy that is to be followed by every state, I mean every country that's involved with the United Nations. And the United States has violated some of those policies as well. But these are things that we have to do with it. But these, just what you were just saying, is something that needs to be brought to light. It needs to be discussed. and I'd like to do it if we can pick up on it Thursday. And Thursday it'll be in the afternoon, though. Unfortunately, it's going to be, I think, at 1 o'clock Eastern time. But these are issues that we need to talk about, because these are serious. And defunding, everybody, I want to mention, when you make those calls, also talk about defunding. You just said it all. You said the reason, CJ. So this is the reason why the DOC around the country needs to be defunded, until they can demonstrate some interaction, positive interaction, until they can demonstrate that the money's being used. We have to see transparency, and we're not seeing it.
Absolutely. Well, unfortunately, on Thursday, I won't be available at that time, but I'd be happy to come on another time and discuss it. But I could also share some thoughts with you before that.
Okay. And next Tuesday, definitely, I'll be on at 6:30. But we're going to be starting these calls, letter writing, and emailing on Thursday. I will be on the show Thursday briefly. But I'm going to be sending the contact information for all of these places out before. I already sent them out, but I'll be sending more information out for everyone. But let's all target the media, first of all, first and foremost. For the first week of July, if we can all target the media, especially the media, majors, we need to get them involved.
Yes, absolutely. Involved. Well, thank you so much for this, and I look forward to us talking again.
Thank you, CJ. I really enjoyed you coming on, and I'll tell you one thing. You can co-host with me anytime, or as I said, you pick a case.
Same here.
Okay.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much for all that you do.
And you as well. So, audience, we are going to be closing now. We will be at Miriam Jacob will be on tomorrow, 1 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, and she will be talking about the prisons in the U.S., as always, and the need for criminal justice reform, and also be talking about the psychological damages of people that are in those in the prisons in the United States. So join us tomorrow at 1 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, and again, we'll be on Thursday at 1 o'clock. Again, please write, email, and call your legislative members, the media, send a letter to the United Nations. Pick all these places that we need to get them more involved. Thank you very much for listening in. CJ, again, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too.